The voice of Senator Jeff Merkley is familiar to listeners in our region, but his voice is also getting known to people in other parts of the country. Senator Merkley is interviewed from time to time on national news programs. He drew special attention for his talking filibuster on the Senate floor earlier this year, attempting to block the nomination of Neil Gorsuch to the Supreme Court. It was not successful. A lot has happened in Washington since that time. Senator Merkley joins us for an update. Senator Merkley, thanks for joining us by phone today.
You're welcome. It's great to be with you.
So I noticed the Senate is talking about trying to block, or was talking about blocking, recess appointments by President Trump. How and how rare is this move?
Well, it's not terribly rare. A strategy was implemented by the Republicans to block recess appointments by President Obama. Under the circumstances right now, where we're concerned about the special prosecutor being fired and then another one appointed, or perhaps no one appointed, returning it to a new AG. In other words, the AG, Jeff Sessions, was at risk of being fired. We're just very concerned about interference with the Justice Department. So that's why we're taking special measures to try to make sure that doesn't happen.
Well, and you mentioned the Attorney General. I mean, what do you make of a president so publicly berating one of his cabinet members and a former colleague of yours at that?
No, it's extremely unusual, extremely strange, and given the fact that their investigations are underway, it looks so much like interference with justice that can include investigations of the president that it seems entirely inappropriate. But I must say the standard for what is done by the presidency has changed dramatically this year, not for the better.
Well, do you find anything refreshing in the off-the-cuffness of it or the informality of it or anything along those lines?
Well, I do think that we're going to see a change from here forward with presidents communicating more directly over Twitter. I'm not sure that's a good thing, but it does create a direct link with the public, and I think one can see perhaps something positive in that, kind of an unfiltered. It's just that it would be nice to have an unfiltered conversation about serious issues, an unfiltered conversation about how we can come together to fix problems rather than the type of comments we're getting from this particular president.
Let me come back to the Jeff Sessions situation, because you worked with him in the Senate. Did you develop any kind of a rapport with him?
Yes, I certainly worked with him on one particular bill and had many interactions with him. In person, of course, he comes across as a very amiable individual. But you have to recognize the reason that Senator Wyden and I voted against his confirmation. It didn't have to do with his personality. It had to do with his record on civil rights, and which we did not think was suitable for the position of Attorney General.
And I wonder about your position, Senator, and some of Jeff Sessions' other moves at the Justice Department, favoring RICO forfeiture renewal, for example, getting tough on drug possession, reviewing affirmative action impacts at universities.
Well, I must say, very little he's done that I think was positive. He's also indicated that he's going to create a campaign to take on the states that have legalized cannabis for medicinal purposes or for recreational purposes. That is certainly something that affects us out here in Oregon. There was a whole bipartisan conversation about redressing the criminal code in a way that would produce far less people in jail for minor drug possession issues. Try to level out some of that and put the resources more to the education side. That whole conversation about trying to address the overly lengthy sentences for minor crimes, that has disappeared because just nowhere it can go with Jeff Sessions as AG. So that's regretful. It was positive to see Democrats and Republicans working together to try to address that issue.
But as a representative of the executive branch, he can only apply law as it is written, so Congress would still have the power to be able to change sentencing laws, would it not?
Yes, this is the case. However, our Republican partners in that conversation just felt that without the support of the president, that they weren't able to go through the effort because any bill that they might write would be vetoed, and they just decided to essentially pull out of the conversation for now.
That had really come a long way in recent years, though, hadn't it, Senator? I mean, the fact is you had people on both sides of the aisle talking about criminal justice reform, and not just both parties, but both ends of the political spectrum, essentially.
Yes, it had come a long ways. I would say it's basically been put into a freeze for the moment.
All right, let's talk about another, as long as we're talking about crime and law, let's talk about the new FBI director, Christopher Wray. Did you vote against him?
Yes, I sure did.
And why?
Well, for a number of reasons. I felt it was so important at this particular moment to have an individual in that position who had no conflicts of interest. And in the case of the FBI director, the nominee, Christopher Wray, there were several. One, he had represented the governor of New Jersey, Chris Christie, in the whole Bridgegate scandal, which was a very whole partisan affair. It was all about partisan warfare, if you will, with Chris Christie trying to punish, and his team trying to punish his political enemies. And then his law firm was involved in representing two Russian state-controlled oil companies and also Donald Trump's business trust. So those all seemed like it didn't seem ideal to have somebody who had been so closely associated with Trump's trust, with Chris Christie's partisan scandal, and with any connection to the Russian state-controlled oil companies. In addition, he had testified to Congress that the USA Patriot Act was strong and it had substantial safeguards to prevent it from being abused to spy on Americans, and that just was not the case. That was not true. And so those were the reasons that I voted against him.
Senator, just about a minute away from our break here, I want to ask, or at least get the conversation started about the Affordable Care Act and Obamacare, as Obamacare. I mean, repeal is certainly not going anyplace at the moment, but do you think it is dead?
Yes, I think it is. There is going to be a bipartisan discussion in the Health Committee to help make the current system work better. That's the conversation we should have had starting back in January. And so I'm crossing my fingers that goes forward productively, because, quite frankly, the Republicans have been sabotaging the health care exchanges, and we need to end that.
All right, more to talk about with Senator Jeff Merkley. We'll have him for about another 15 minutes or so when we come back from this break. This is the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio. Back in a minute 10. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We have a few minutes more with Oregon Senator Jeff Merkley, back in Oregon from the congressional recess with lots of issues on his plate. He's in the mid-Willamette Valley today and joins us by phone. You can join with your questions as well at 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. Jeff in Ashland asked a question of you, Senator Jeff, about particularly about the ACA and whether there's a way to discourage the White House from sabotaging the process.
I think that publicity is the most important factor. The president did several things. His team shortened the advertising for the open period, which decreased significantly the size of the pool on the exchange. They, most importantly, held up the cost-sharing payments, which are the way that the insurance companies are compensated so that they can lower the premiums and the out-of-pocket costs and the deductibles, all very important to insurance being affordable. And that resulted in a number of insurance companies pulling out of different states. For example, one pulled out of the entire state of Ohio. And that just, if you can understand, any insurance company not knowing what they're going to be paid can't price their policies for the year ahead. And right now is when those decisions have to be made. If that's not addressed immediately, that is going to do a lot of damage. And then there's another thing called reinsurance, where if a company goes into a new marketplace, they need to be insured against a disproportional share of the really ill people until that is kind of a stabilized market. And the Republicans got rid of reinsurance, which has made it basically meant no companies are going into new places, or very few. So that takes away the whole idea of encouraging companies to make their offerings and compete with others on an open marketplace. So if those things have to be addressed, if the exchange is going to work.
Do you include the risk corridor funding in the definition of reinsurance?
I'm sorry, say that one more time.
Do you include the risk corridor funding that was also cut by the Senate as
yes.
Yes, as part of that? All right, which
yes,
was really
that, that that terminology is often used synonymous, yes, with the reinsurance.
All right. Let's take another call here from Kim in Rogue River. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Oregon Senator Jeff Merkley.
Good morning, Senator Merkley. I am trying to understand. Good morning. I am trying to understand your position on political contributions. You seem to be against big money in politics, against things like the Koch brothers and that sort of thing. But on the other hand, I get a lot of emails from you asking for contributions. So I'm wondering what exactly is your position, and do you support things like the programs that represent us we're trying to introduce in South Dakota to severely limit the possibility of corruption and bribery?
All right. Thanks for the call. Appreciate that.
So I'm not sure the exact program in South Dakota, but let me speak more generally. Citizens United is a disastrous Supreme Court decision. It was a 5-4 decision. It actually is the decision that led to the theft of the Supreme Court seat, because the Republicans and the Koch brothers wanted to pack the court to make sure that they kept having the power to spend hundreds of millions of dollars in third-party campaigns. They've used that strategy to control the Senate. They're really the puppet master behind the Senate, and they want to keep that control. It's the complete opposite of the vision of our Constitution. We do have direct funding to campaigns that there is a limit on, and so those of us who are trying to prepare for the onslaught of these third-party Koch brother-style campaigns, and they did come after me in my last election, are going to do all we can to get individuals, as you mentioned, kind of email solicitations. We're going to do all we can to get individuals to put in modest amounts of money so that we're prepared to fend them off.
And here's a call from Rika in Grants Pass. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Senator Jeff Merkley.
Well, good morning. You know,
if
Congress can pass a bill to restrict the president's power to make recess appointments, I'm thinking that Democrats and Republicans can get together on other matters like justice reform and marijuana reform.
Well, that's a very hopeful vision. And keep hold of hope, because we need a lot of hope right now. It doesn't require a bill to be passed. It requires the Democrats to work to try to make sure that we're not out of session long enough that a recess appointment can be made. And there's still a lot of debate over exactly the details of how this can be done and whether it can be done successfully. So stay tuned.
Well, you know, you get to the nub, Senator, of what goes on in Congress, where even if a majority of people in the country favor something, and even if a majority of members of the Congress, either House, favors something, the fact is, if the party in charge does not have a majority of its members, it doesn't get to the floor. Is that the case in the Senate as much as in the House?
That is very much the case. I won't say it's not been adopted in the same way that it was almost an official rule pronounced by the Speaker. But it is very unusual to have a bill come to the floor that doesn't have the majority of the majority party supporting it. But here's the thing: it's becoming harder and harder to just have simple problem solving. I mean, my Republican colleagues have acknowledged, for example, going back to health care, that we have to fix the reinsurance. We have to fix the advertising for the open period. We have to fix the cost sharing. But instead, they went on basically what has been a 7-month tirade of trying to destroy Obamacare, even though their constituents supported keeping it. And that speaks to the money in politics, and it also speaks to the chasm in the media. The difference between where Fox News is, which is listened to by the majority of the Republican base, and where, say, CNN is, which may be the other polar extreme, or MSNBC. And so with America listening in and hearing very different stories about what's happening, it's forcing the parties further and further apart. That's not healthy for our nation.
There are things that there seems to be agreement in principle on, like the agreement that the tax code should be simplified. I mean, what do you see potentially happening as the year goes on about reforming the tax code?
Well, I'm not optimistic. The main vision that the Republicans have had has been to do vast giveaways of the national treasury to the richest Americans, and realize that right now, 0.1%. In other words, the 1 out of 1,000 who is richest in America, that portion, owns 90% of the assets in our nation. And so we are an extraordinarily unequal nation in terms of the resources held by families for a foundation to thrive. And so my Republican colleagues want to do a tax code that will make that 0.1% even richer. And that is where their funding comes from. It's very incestuous. Meanwhile, we on my side of the aisle have put out a statement, we're not going to support a tax code changes that are designed to simply make the rich richer. That we're going to look for a tax changes that will proceed to produce living wage jobs in here in America, lighten the burden on the middle class, but not one that is a giveaway to those who are already very well off.
Senator Jeff Merkley, under a minute left here. Let's talk about the Cascade-Siskiyou National Monument. Secretary Zinke of the Interior Department was in the area recently visiting the monument, talking to Farm Bureau representatives and some environmental groups as well. What do you see as if the administration wanted to make a change to any national monument designation, what its powers might be under the Antiquities Act?
Well, so it's very, very disturbing what Zinke is doing. Senator Wyden and I met with him this last week and asked him to halt and desist. It was apparent he had no understanding of the importance of this particular area where three mountain ranges and the Great Basin come together for a very unique and fragile ecosystem. He had no understanding of it as the land bridge, even though I'd personally gone over this with him before, and our team had gone over it with his staff. He certainly had a very unbalanced view of the residents in the region, so if we see the secretary proceed to unilaterally advise the president to reverse what the previous administration did, it will be an enormous change in conduct. Now, there have been kind of administrative fixes, I think about 18 times in the past. There's been small adjustments, but nothing on the order of a president essentially trying to reverse what a previous president had done. And if that happens, it changes the whole understanding of the role of monuments in our country and the appropriateness of each president taking a look to see if there's a special treasure that needs additional protection. And certainly, we heard from the scientists that the Cascade-Siskiyou Monument wasn't large enough in the watersheds to protect that fragile infrastructure, that fragile ecosystem. So it was very science-based, very deliberative, a tremendous amount of some 20,000 acres that were initially laid out by the scientists was taken out of the monument expansion in order to address the concern of some of the timber and the agricultural community, the grazing community. A lot of effort was done to balance that out, a lot of public testimony, four different public sessions. The comments went 4-1 in favor of the expansion. Anyway, I'm very concerned about this, and I encourage people to weigh in with the president and with Congressman Walden to support the expansion as it stands.
All right. Senator Jeff Merkley in the Mid-Willamette Valley today, appreciate your time and for letting us take about 2 minutes more of it than we originally had planned. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Great to be with you.
All
take
right.
care now.